The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
And we're back.
Yes.
With Emilio Martinez de Nuevo México.
De Nuevo México. Colorado, actually.
Neil. Colorado.
Yeah, Colorado.
Colorado. Yeah, yeah. Chili Colorado. It always
Chili
comes down to the food.
También.
So let's get it out of the way. Right at the beginning of our second hour already. Pozole or menudo?
Menudo.
Pozole or menudo?
I grew up at pozole, but I became a menudo.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. Well,
very good. Next. All right, and then we'll go back to Steve. All right, Steve.
Pozole.
Let's start talking about crispy pata. But you're only half Filipino.
Sin pata.
Actually, 3/8 Filipino.
3/8 full. Well, that explains the height.
It's Filipino.
Ooh. Yep.
But you played basketball.
I did.
I mean, how many Filipinos play basketball?
Believe it or not, when I was attending USC,
You went to USC.
Oh.
Sorry.
Next
thing you're going to tell me, you were like an activist in the Black Student Union.
Actually, I belonged to the Black Student Union, the Filipino Student Union, and the Latino Business
You can't be a Republican then. Sorry.
Wow.
No. Yeah. We're not even going to validate your parking. Get out.
It was interesting because to answer your Filipino basketball player. Mm-hmm. So in the Troy Philippines was the Filipino Student Union, and they would have this annual basketball tournament against other schools, and it was Filipinos.
Right.
And so everyone thought, okay, well, we got Shaq. We got the Filipino Shaq on our team. We get out into West Covina to play, and then it was one of the colleges out there, small colleges. And there's these two twins that are 6'6", and they're Filipino.
Whoa.
Yeah, and we got our butts kicked.
Mm-hmm.
That'll do it.
Well, that was like Dennis Prager on this show. He's like 6'6", and the only time he played basketball, he started dribbling the ball going in the wrong direction.
By the way, I need a racist. Somebody check me on my racism here. When you said Filipino Shaq, I literally thought like a Shaq in the Philippines. That's the image. I'm sorry. Is that racist?
My grandfather was from the. He was from the north,
that's what
he was from the farmland, and he kind of lived in a shack.
When they say Filipino, there's a Filipino shack on the court. Get the forklift and get it out of there.
In the late '60s, this was during the Vietnam War. I was assigned to an aircraft carrier, and we would pull into to Subic Bay every month. We'd be at sea for like 40 days, and then we'd pull into Longapo City in the Subic Bay. And that's what kind of reminded me of that. But it was a great time. You know, I was 19 years old, and Longapo City in 1969 was like an old Wild West town, like, you know, Dodge City or Tombstone or dirt streets and nothing but rows and rows of, you know, the New York bar, the Longhorn bar, the Texas bar. And it was just, you know, during the 60s. So it was filled with people with high-pitched voices singing Beatle tunes and Steppenwolf and Magic Carpet Ride. And it was like a great time. San Miguel beer was 25 cents a bottle. And I used to, you know, late at night, I'd be on the side of the road cooking monkey meat with
monkey meat. Yeah, no,
you talk about you know these street vendors here. I mean, they talk about some real street vendors,
really?
And they be, you know, when you're two sheets to the wind and it's 11 o'clock at night, monkey meat barbecue tastes pretty darn good.
Just don't say you had chilled monkey brains, okay?
Monkeys are our friends.
Monkeys are our friends. That's
well,
right.
Your face
friends,
off,
right?
I don't know about that.
Paul, monkeys are our friends.
But anyway.
Not our food.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say, you know, Friday was at Bob's Big Boy. Do you guys ever go there?
Toluca Lake?
Yeah.
Did we ever go there?
Yeah,
I grew up in the valley. Toluca Lake.
Yeah,
no, you're talking Toluca Lake, Bob. I'm talking Van Nuys, Bob. That's
the original?
That's one of the originals. A cruise night, Wednesday night, on Van Nuys Boulevard. Start over at Sherman Way, and you go all the way up to, you know, pass by, and you go through Bob's and turn around and go back.
All right. Well, the first time ever there was a rescue group there adopting animals, Bubbles Rescue. So I did this video for Facebook. It's like, wow. So Starbucks had let them use a plot of their parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
So they had all the animals out there, and it was a real really cool shout out for this rescue group, Bubbles Rescue, to do this at Bob's. I said, you know, look, if the people don't want to go to the shelters, bring the animals to the people. Mm-hmm. You know, you have about, what, 1,000 people that go there on a Friday night?
Oh, Friday night, the different car clubs that go there. You know, and there are so many. And we'll come back to you, Stephen. There are so many good rescue groups. I mean, who's that with the Leadwell Kitties? Is it Ellie Witzel? Because I see her postings all the time, and she's always putting postings on there, especially when the clock is ticking on some of these animals that are in the shelter. Yes. And it's like, okay, you know, this is a cutoff date. You know, and they pictures and a description and stuff, because if they don't get adopted, then they're going to be gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's funny because I first got involved in looking at the animal shelters and animal rescue, like I said, when I was running for mayor. And no matter what the issue is, I always look at there's a financial gain. Somewhere. Somebody's making money, whether it's homelessness, mm-hmm. whether it's crime, whether it's foster care, whatever it is, somebody's making money. And at that time, I think they had like 70,000 dogs and cats that were being killed in the LA animal shelters.
Yeah, they came in. That's how many were coming in for sure.
Yeah.
And it was like an 80% kill rate or something crazy.
And so I started just, you know, like I said, I was on a fact-finding mission. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, where's the financial incentive to kill that many dogs and cats? And when I found out that the city was paying rendering companies to come in and take the animals to be processed for rendered protein so that they could, you know, make makeup. There's all these different products that use rendered protein. It's like, oh, okay. Here you have an instance where somebody can go in and get raw product and get paid to pick it up, and then they go and they process it, and they sell it overseas.
Oh, my gosh. It's like Soylent Green is kitties.
Puppies. But the reality is, so I looked further, and the rendering industry in this country is a multi-billion-dollar industry. And so it made sense. And so what my proposal was, had I become mayor, was that we go ahead, we remove the financial incentive. If rendering companies are going to still come and pick up the dead animals, they have to pay for it. And then we take that money and we give it to the rescue groups and the spayed and neuter groups and the adoption, so that we fully fund all of these groups, these fine groups that step up and want to do that. So
that was discussed. I don't think it works that way anymore, because it's under contract with the rendering plants. They're paid to come and do it no matter what the volume is. But that's worthy of a consideration to look into. Like, I don't think it works that way anymore. Like, oh, you're paying for the rendering. I don't think that.
Well, because remember, a lot of these rendering companies, they make political contributions to candidates and to elected officials. So there is that money just goes around.
Yeah.
And so that's how I think
that people said that back in the day.
Yeah.
And I think from what I remember several years ago, that wasn't the case anymore, but it's worthy of looking into.
Well, and then I started looking at no-kill animal shelters, because I didn't know anything about that.
Yeah.
And then I took a course that Nathan Winograd put on.
Oh, yeah. And at the hotel. We were there together.
Yeah, at the Beverly Garland.
They started off with a puppy being euthanized.
Yeah. And so I went there, and it was because people say, well, this is you can't do that. That's only for like a small city. And then he did it in a big city. And so it's like, if you have the willingness to do something, you take away the financial gain out of it, that there's an incredible amount of things that you can do. And I think that is why I support these rescue groups so much.
Yeah.
Is because it's more than a labor of love. It's their conscience. It's in their DNA to it's almost biblical about, you know, taking care of animals.
Yeah, there was a saint, right? The patron saint of animals?
Yeah, the Saint Francis of Assisi. But in the Bible it says, a righteous man shows
stewards.
Tender mercies to his animals.
Yeah, we're stewards of that somehow that got lost. The by the way, you know, it's getting really hot. Just wanted to say real quick, it's getting really hot now, so people should not leave their animals in the car no matter what. The temperatures get so hot you don't even know it. Dogs don't sweat. They pant, and they can die very easily. PC597.7 is the code if you want to look it up. That they can actually break into your car now if they see an animal in distress. But it has to be in distress, and it's got to be – there's something more, you know, that could happen to the animal. So just wanted to throw that out there. But, you know, to your point also with rescues, the last administration at the shelter used to badmouth them, saying they just do it to make money. Do you know how much it costs for medical on an animal? Thousands of dollars. The dog I'm fostering right now is from South L.A. The adoption fee is $450. The training so far was a couple of grand, I think, so far. The training. So they don't make a ton of money. They count on donations, and they need the several hundred dollars or $400 or $500 to help keep them alive. If they go out of business, we lose a distribution point.
Well, I mean, the city budget, I think, is what, about $9 billion now for the city of L.A.? Why should they charge anything for adoption?
Well, here, look, that's a really good point. There's something called perceived value in marketing. Why would somebody pay $2,500, $5,000 for a purebred dog out of a store? Because our psychology says perceived value.
Right, it's a better dog.
Yeah, it's this
dog. Because I'm paying a bunch of cash.
Thing, you know, look at this thing. I get a bag with them and everything. I put them in the bag.
dog sounds like
shelter.
Yeah. I'll pass.
That's kind of like the argument of who washes a rented car.
Well, look, it's just perception. And when you look at the shelter animals, you think they're discarded. So, I don't want a discarded animal. That's disgusting. That's like secondhand clothing, right? So what we need to do with the shelters is recreate what these dogs really are. And these are gifts to us when we treat them right. And by the way, if you adopt an animal from the shelter, you will get free training for Hope for Paws. Mm-hmm. We'll give you free training for the animal up in Mission Hills area.
Okay.
And the North Central Shelter is at 3201 Lacey Street. My bad.
I'm so embarrassed. Lacey Street and where?
And North Central.
In Los Angeles.
I never go down
3201. You go to the webpage. The city has its new $75 million webpage.
Well, you know, one of the bills that I was trying to get passed was the Animal Abuser Registry.
Yes.
And that is that, you know, when someone wants to go and they want to, you know, whether it's a city shelter or whether it's a private adoption agency, that if somebody is convicted of animal abuse, that their name be in a registry. And so when someone goes in, they could just go ahead and let's check. Oh, sorry, you can't have a dog.
Right.
Or you can't have a bunny rabbit or whatever. You are disqualified based on your own behavior.
That was the problem with these $5 donations or rescues, adoptions rather, from people. It's like when I'd ask them, do you do any background check on adopters? No. Do you even run the license to see who these folks have, if they have anything on their record? No. Don't you think that might be a pretty good idea, like you're saying? That because, you know, either you take these animals for $5 and you're taking them out to medical facilities, right? Mm-hmm. Or you're breeding them. COVID brought a lot of backyard breeders. Mm-hmm. These kids, that's how they were making money.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And I even dated a girl once, and she told me, yeah, my brother's breeding these dogs. I'm like, oh, please don't tell me that. Don't tell me that. Please tell him to stop.
Well, and they also use them for dog fighting.
Yes.
I mean, because that's still prominent. Yeah. And so I guess there's got to be
– bait dogs. They're called bait dogs.
Yeah. There's got to be something in between to where you can't make it so difficult that people are going to say, hell with this. I'm going to go pay $2,500 for a purebred. Because you want to come and inspect my yard, you want to do – I mean, because people do get a little overprotective as well.
Some of the rescues,
so there's both ends of the spectrum. So that – you know, those are a lot of challenges that we have locally. And – but, you know, we're
– to help mitigate that, David, if you see an animal that you want to adopt, the rescue will pay – not pay you, but they will give you the food. And they think they ask for a 2-month commitment. Like, look, please hold the animal. We'll try to place
it. Kind of like foster care.
Foster care. Mm-hmm. And then we'll give you the food for it and whatever you need, the toys, everything. And partner up with the shelter. If you see a dog at the shelter, tell the rescue, hey, I saw this, get the A number, the animal number. I want that dog. Can you pull that dog for me? And I will foster him for you or I will adopt him. Right? So we have a good partnership there. Mm-hmm. That's another way to help people who are looking for the $2,500
Well, you know, with social media, I should probably do something I did probably 10 years ago, is I went to the shelter and I took pictures of all the dogs in the shelter. Mm-hmm. And then on Facebook, I had a Facebook page, you mm-hmm. know, are you looking for me? Because, you know, not all of those dogs were surrendered. A lot of them were picked up. Mm. And, you know, and people, that's where you see all of these signs on telephone poles.
Yeah.
And I used to take pictures of the mm-hmm. signs, mm-hmm. and I'd put that on Facebook.
Yeah, that's great.
And so that, you know, people, you know, yeah. with the area of where it's at. And it costs absolutely nothing to do that. And, you know, and that's just a tool. Now we have, like, what, Nextdoor? We have all these different apps yeah. that we can do that. And so technology, as bad as it is in some areas, it's still a pretty useful tool.
Yeah, communication. Yeah.
Yeah. So now, Steve, it's okay, we got out of the way. You went to USC. You played basketball. You went there. You were right. Part of the Black Student Union.
Filipino and, Student Union.
Why, where were you expecting Latino to go? UCLA? Business. Is that the cool college you go to?
Well, you know, I wanted to go to UCLA. They didn't have an undergraduate business program, and I wasn't going to go to graduate school. So I was accepted to Berkeley, mm-hmm. was all ready to go, and my brother talked some sense into me, and I ended up at SC.
Well, but you know, you could have joined Mecha, but you belong to the, you know, with the Latino Business Student Association. So you redeemed yourself a little bit.
I did. I did. Had to play to all my sides, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, now your father was what, a computer programmer?
My father was a computer programmer. He was born in South L.A.,
mm-hmm.
Graduated Thomas Jefferson High School.
Mm-hmm.
He was in a street gang.
That's racist. Mm-hmm.
The Roman 20s.
Thomas Jefferson. He's racist, you know.
Yeah.
The Rolling 20s. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the Rolling
20s. No, I was waiting for him to pick that. Before the Rolling 20s, he was the Roaming 20s.
Oh, the Roaming 20s.
He grew up off of 23rd and San Pedro.
OG.
Okay. Yeah, OG. Yeah.
OG.
He then was drafted to Vietnam in 66.
Mm-hmm.
Upon returning, he was working at Mattel.
Well, did he go in the Army or Marines?
Army.
So he was in the Army in 66. I went into the Navy in 67.
Okay. And he, after finishing his basic, he ended up in Dothan, Alabama
mm-hmm.
in 1966. And even the barracks were segregated.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, you had a Democrat governor, George Wallace.
Yes.
And, you know, it's let's face it. I mean,
was he part of the KKK?
Who? Wallace. George Wallace?
Did he have toxic?
Who was the other one? No, you're thinking of Senator Byrd.
Yeah, I just
Senator Byrd back to Robert Byrd.
Yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
Another Republican, right?
Yeah.
I do.
No.
Biden and Clinton's mentor.
Biden, Clinton.
So back to he's in Alabama.
Alabama. His first time to the South. And
talk about a wake-up call from South Central LA.
Coming from South Central LA. And yeah, it was an eye-opener for him. So, you know, when he came back, he went to work for Mattel, and mm-hmm. IBM and the Urban League were offering free computer programming classes.
Oh, cool.
So he learned
computer. Was that Mattel over there off of the 110 freeway?
El Segundo.
In El Segundo, right over there.
And he took the classes, was really good at it, and he had a 40-year run as a computer programmer.
How could he work for Mattel? I mean, Barbie was only white back then.
You know,
I mean, talk about racist.
Yeah, exactly.
And what sexist. Did he do?
Exactly. And my mom ended up, you know, again, my mom grew up in the Echo Park area.
Uh-huh.
She was also in a gang. She was mm-hmm. Baby Temple.
Baby Temple. Baby okay.
Her nickname was China.
China. And so she was Filipino, right?
Filipino and Mexican. Mm-hmm. And
China. Of course they would call her China.
China, right?
Because in Mexico, all the Asians are China.
China or Chino, right? Chino, yeah. Chinito. Mm-hmm.
They're not racist.
No, not at all. Anyway. None of that.
It's culture.
Well, remember,
it's culture.
Remember, BLM said that only white people can be
right,
racist.
Right, yeah.
Right? So.
Well, they said that because the people of color had no power. I mean, that was their premise.
That was the premise.
But it was, wait a minute. You had Barack Obama serve two terms.
Correct.
You had Eric Holder, the highest law enforcement officer in the country.
Yep.
You also had, who was the other?
Well, I mean, even before that, you had Condoleezza Rice. I mean, Colin
Powell.
Yeah. I mean, the list goes on.
Yeah.
And so The way my parents, you know, they grew up, the humble beginnings, my first furniture.
Sounded like the McCoys or the Hatfields or Romeo and Juliet.
Okay, yeah, exactly.
Two gang members. Total opposites coming together.
So basically it was West Side Story.
Well, before that, though, my mom had gotten married right out of high school. Had my oldest brother at 20, the next one at 23. Her ex-husband, he was abusive, physically abusive. So they got divorced. She met my dad in 69. And it was the heyday of the hippie movement, and they were hippies, and they would go to the Love-Ins in Griffith Park.
Wow!
Don't tell me your dad had an afro.
He did.
He had an afro.
He didn't cut his hair for 13 years.
There you go.
and it was, but he shaped it, sprayed the afro sheen in, and took the rag and shaped it to a nice.
Going down to Mattel that way every day.
He did. Yeah.
All right.
And so my dad, he had the VA loan, bought a house in Hawthorne.
For about $12,000.
Yeah, over there, right by the airport, not too far from the airport.
I bought a house in North Hollywood with the GI Bill for $27,000.
And
that's racist.
Yeah, and this was...
So this was 1974.
Yeah, and this was 1971 when I bought the house. And then a couple of years later, my mom was kind of seeing things changing in the neighborhood and moved us to Harbor City. And I was the youngest of three boys. And then the third youngest in a neighborhood of 30 boys. And so it was a fight. And every day, whether it was in the house to get seconds or turn the TV on or play a game or get a word in or outside, was always the youngest. So to play any sports.
Well, that's near what, San Pedro?
Right on the border. San Pedro, Lameda, Carson, Torrance, that little
kind of Harbor City is that little area in there. Okay.
But you guys aren't in a gang.
No.
Okay.
No, too tall.
Too tall. No one knew what I was, so no one wanted me.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So right now you're kind of like telling a typical story of the American
dream. And that's
for people coming out of the civil rights movement.
And right. Yeah. Yes. But see, and I never was. My father was in the mid 70s after Mattel. He went to work for Coopers and Lybrand. So can you imagine a black man, computer programmer at one of the top CPA firms in the nation.
Walking in looking like Link from the Mod Squad?
Exactly. But he never came home and never once complained. Never cried racism. Ever. Ever. My mom, being a brown woman, rose up to be a human resource manager at Northrop. Never cried glass ceiling or anything like that. So for me growing up, all I saw was opportunity. They taught us, my brothers and I, you can be whatever you want
to
be.
Sure, and then you get to go to USC. Okay. Then you're kind of like, you're having that.
Now that was a culture shock. My first day showing up, I'm in my 1987 Nissan Sentra with no passenger side mirror, no air conditioning, nothing, no floor mats. And I pull into
460 air. Yeah, 60 miles an hour on the freeway with all four windows
exactly.
down.
Exactly. That was my air conditioning. And that was also a way to kind of keep the noise level down. Just block it out. Pull in, BMW, Porsche, Mercedes. I wanted to leave after my first semester. I said, I don't belong here. But talked to people, some of my father's friends, and I stayed, and it was one of the best choices I made. And I just... From that point on, though, all I saw was opportunity. So I what I see now, and especially when Obama was elected, because I had a lot of black friends who would always tell me, a black man will never get elected president. They'll never elect a black man president. The man's always going to have his foot on our neck. Steve, you're crazy. How could you not be a Democrat? How could you not side? And then when he got elected, I looked at him and I said.
I said, oh, he'll never get elected again.
Now, hold on. Barack Obama is half black, so he's not only is he the first black president, he's also the 44th white president.
This is true. But he's the first biracial president.
He's the first biracial president. He's got a couple of firsts, right. But he's still the 44th white president, right?
And I told my friends, my black friends, so what's your excuse now? What's your excuse? And I've never bought into the victim, the victimhood and the victimization. So, and because of how I grew up and because of seeing my parents.
So, is that what you're centering your congressional run around? Is that like what was the moment that you said, okay, I got to throw my chips in. I'm running for Congress.
It's when I realized that in my specific district, that my opponent has sold his soul to the Democratic Party.
And this is Ted Lieu. Ted Lieu.
That he is putting the party before the people. That in the party has become the party of the elite. And so that's not how – and watching them try to transform and reimagine America is – so it kind of destroyed my upbringing, how I viewed America. And I said, something's got to change.
Because your personal story is, hey, my parents were gang members. They're people of color, whatever that means. And they got an opportunity. My dad went from being segregated in the barracks to walking into the CPA.
Correct.
Their son rolls into USC.
And then I raised three daughters of my own. One of my daughters recently graduated from Berklee Haas School of Business. Sky's the limit. And they're trying to, and I'm seeing the Democratic Party tried to destroy that. Mm-hmm. And so
They're trying to destroy the American story, the American narrative.
They're trying to retell
and
it.
That's what you sounds correct. Like you're fighting.
They're trying to retell it.
It's a retcon.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Right,
yeah. It's a retcon where George Washington is the villain.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
All right. There's the music. We'll be right back for our last half hour with Steve Williams, candidate for Congress, and Paul DeRaja, and Emilio Martinez.
Martinez.
Don't go away. We'll be right back. And we're back, and the mics are live, and we're back
live.
With...
live.
How do you say mic? Microphone?
Microfona. I don't know. Microfona? I don't speak Spanish. I just pull out
You speak Spanglish.
I pull out Siri and let
Google.
Us do the
Siri,
talking.
Siri, how do you translate. Say, donde está el baño?
See, I know. This is awful. We're just giving, you know, all the people that think Hispanic Republicans are just these, like, whitewashed, we're just feeding into
coconuts.
We're just feeding into their coconuts.
You're not even a coconut because you're a güero. And so I'm the coconut.
You're the coconut.
Well, you know, brown on the outside, white on the inside.
Black people are Oreos, right? When they're black on the outside, white. But Hispanics
Uncle Tom.
Are.
I'm white passing.
And you know what they call Asians?
No.
Bananas.
No.
Yeah, well, all right.
And, you know, and it's really something because, you know, a dear friend of mine, she called me up. She was practically in tears. And she was told that, you know, she's too controversial and she's Republican and she should stay away with some of these conservative Republican groups because she's coming across as being too controversial. And, you know, and she's Puerto Rican and black. And they told her, you know, you could actually pass. So, you know, kind of tone down all of the... you know, the stuff about parental rights and...
Wait, she get pass as what, black Puerto Rican? What does she pass as?
As a...
like a Dominican?
Yeah. and so it was like... So, you know, we're not saying that there are some people that are racist. I mean, I don't care...
Absolutely.
Of
what ethnicity they are. But the fact is that to categorize all Republicans as a certain really shows the somebody is really naive. They're just not aware, and you know, and they're not, and good people can have those beliefs. They're just not aware. You know, when I was starting this Republican Club, you know, I've always been an American with no hyphen. And but when I started looking through the voter rolls, I saw how many Hispanics were already registered Republican. And I had been hearing for decades, oh, how do you get Hispanics to, or Latinos, or I've been called just about everything. How do you get them to register Republican? And I started looking, and it's usually somebody who wasn't Hispanic, trying to, you know, to speak to a crowd about, oh, you know, they're conservative, but they don't know it. And when I started looking through the voter rolls, and I saw that they were already registered Republican, they knew it. But they were invisible, and they were invisible to me. And I'd been directly involved in politics for 20 years, and so I specifically wanted to create something where people could see, wow, Hispanic Republican. Not that it's an anomaly, but the fact is that there's so many of them, but they're invisible. And so that's how we came up with the L.A. Hispanic Republican Club. I did get a lot of flack from people who said, you should just be American or you should just be a Republican.
Well, yeah, but here's the deal. Race is a reality. It's part of who we are. It's part of the people. You know, it's part of our story. Right. So but it's not the whole thing.
No, but it's at least a part.
That's what's happening, I think, is that people go to those extremes of like, I'm completely colorblind or everything is explainable by the
skin color. If you say you're colorblind, then you're racist and you don't know it because you're not acknowledging the struggle of black people in this country.
Right. Exactly. Because but that's held by people that define everything by race.
Well,
which is race is like race is just a part of who I am.
Yeah, but they're confusing race with culture.
Absolutely.
Culture is what it is. People grow up with a culture and beliefs and family values that they pass on from generation to generation.
Yeah, but there's a certain connection between race and culture because like
sure. –
Like, you know, I'm like I mentioned earlier, I'm part Jewish, I'm part Indian. I
used to belong to the Jewish Republican Club.
Yeah.
And I looked at that organization and that's what kind of got me going in the direction of a Hispanic Republican Club because I went to a lot of their meetings. I went to some of their weekend retreats, and I was always treated with respect and always encouraged. And you know, I wasn't Jewish. One of my dear friends who is no longer with us, Larry Greenfield, who is one of the founders, you know, unfortunately he took his own life last year. And, you know, it's, you see people on the outside, you don't really know what's going on the inside, you know, and people make snap judgments of people and they just don't know the demons that people are dealing with. And so when you get to know people, regardless of, you know, their skin pigmentation or their religious beliefs.
It's so tiresome, really.
Well, all you have to do is look in a family. If I take a black family, there's going to be the guy that everybody thinks is a mess up. And then there's going to be the guy that, like, he's got his head together and he's getting, you know, and, you know, there's going to be the guy who's just like the funny guy or something. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, so even though they may share, like, cultural connections or racial connections, they're also individual people.
Well, yeah, people are people.
Right. And that's what I'm saying is that, you know, that race is a part of who I am.
Sure.
It really is. It explains why I was born in Colorado. I could have been born in Africa or China.
Right.
But I was born there because of these.
That's where your father was.
That's where that's where he met my mother. And then they did that special hug thing. Anyway, kids, that's another show. Okay. And then but that's a part of me. And I take a certain pride in who I am and my story. But I don't – and I love finding out about other people.
You've evolved through that. And so there's a lot of people that are in that process of evolving through that. Instead of, you know, Chicano power all of that, okay, it goes back to family and the need for family, the need for connection. We were talking about a lot of gangs where people, you know, they didn't have that family connection, so they were looking for it somewhere to get that validation, that sense of camaraderie.
And I think what you've done, David, you noticed, like you said, that there were Hispanic Republicans, but they were invisible, and by you creating this club – and then later on this show, you've given them a safe place.
Yeah.
To not it was the cancel culture before there was cancel culture.
Oh, yeah. Believe me. I had a booth at Politicon at the L.A. Convention Center going back maybe 4 years ago. No, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, right next to MSNBC. And it had a big, big L.A. Hispanic Republican Club in red. A couple of MAGA hats were hanging from the top there, and people were coming by. And I created a bumper sticker that said "Brown is the new red."
Right.
And because I saw the Republican Party was trying to become a little softer, they were going to more of a teal color scheme. Yeah. And so
no, you threw it, in their face.
I had that there, and people were coming over, and especially if they were Hispanic, they saw it. Whether they were Republican or not, they still got it. They were really, really happy to see me there.
And if I'm not mistaken, in W's second term, that second election, I think he carried the Hispanic vote.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. So that is what woke me up to saying, you know, hey, it's not what they're painting it to be, and that actually when – and then listening to Larry – Larry Elder, mm-hmm. and realizing, okay, yeah, when you really analyze it, the value system that the black family, the black community has, and the value system that the Hispanic community has, and the Filipino community, it's actually pretty conservative. It aligns with the Republican
values.
Yeah, it's coming, ideology, yeah, coming down to issues. Well, and I knew I was on the right track when I had an activist came up to our booth, and he looked around and he goes, you know, you're like the Jews in World War II that cooperated with the Nazis. And wow. he said, you know, the Republicans are just using you. And I said, well, you mean I should be a Democrat? And he goes, yes. And I go, because I'm Hispanic? He goes, yes. So the base of the color of my skin, I should be a Democrat? Doesn't that make you racist? he got a little upset.
Right.
And I said, you're either racist or misinformed. I don't know which it is. I said, but the Republicans aren't using us. We are the Republicans. You know, no one's using, and that's why this is an independent club. It's an independent Republican club because we support good Democrats.
Right.
We've had Alex Villanueva in here a number of times. We had John McKinney in here a number of times. There's a lot of good Democrats out there.
Absolutely.
And so we're very fortunate indeed. We have a great sponsor. Don Monroe, the Monroe family at CNM Meadows, they believe in what we're doing. And it was the same situation. His father's black, his mother's Hispanic. Damn. And fourth generation recycler. And so many of the policies coming out of Sacramento are really hurting the small businesses of color.
Yes.
That really don't have a voice. And that's why they've supported us in this show for so long. And now, Steve, how can people support you? How can they get in touch with you?
So they can go to my website. It's steve4congress.org. And there's very easily to sign up to volunteer. Also can donate to the campaign. And I will be setting up booths at various community events throughout the district and the farmers markets. And people will be able to come. They can volunteer to help out at the booths. They can come talk to me, kind of find out more about my policy positions on different things. And, you know, just I engage with everybody. I even engage with my trolls on Twitter. It's interesting because I don't come at it the typical way that most people deal with trolls. Eventually, I'm able to soften them up and actually get them to admit, well, it's your party is what's lost. You seem like a good guy. You seem like you're trying to do good. But
you created a cognitive dissonance for them.
Yes, and that's because, again, how I grew up. I always used to tell my parents, "Listen, you can make everybody happy." No, Stevie, you can't make everybody happy. You're gonna end up being disappointed in life. I said, no, you just have to find that happy medium. Kind of what Frank was trying.
Yeah, kind of like what Frank was saying,
trying to say. And I've always felt that way, and still do that. You know, if you can just have a civil conversation and, you know, see each other's points, then eventually you can arrive at that happy medium.
Well, and, you know, especially someone running for office is a lot different than just an activist.
Correct.
You know, and I see that a lot. And sometimes it's a hard transition. Because they want, you know, they're out there on a street corner, you know, they're at a Trump rally and they want this and they want that and, you know, da da da. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, you're running for office to represent everyone in the district.
Yes.
You know, not just black Filipino
Mexicans.
Right. Yeah. That are Republican.
Yeah. And a lot of them, you know, a lot of them are my friends, and God bless them. You know, I hear all the time, "We got to get rid of the rhinos." Okay, we looked at the voter registration numbers for California, about 5.5 million. You get rid of the rhinos, there goes 2 million right there.
There you go.
You ain't gonna ever get elected to anything. Correct. And so, if you want a candidate that you have to agree 100% on every issue, you have to be the candidate.
Yeah.
Not the, you know, not anyone else. And so, and when I tell people, because I was in, where was I? Torrance, speaking over at Torrance Airport. That's where we met.
Correct.
Again. And I was listening to my friend Arthur, and it's like, Arthur, you've gone from addressing some of these bills, horrific bills that are coming out, to taking on the whole issue of homosexuality.
Yes.
That's a losing – you know, you are – it's like the Christians that wouldn't vote for Mitt Romney because he was Mormon, you know. And it's like, okay, so you're pro-life, but you're not going to vote for a Mormon. And so you end up with – Barack Obama,
right,
and you're going to have more abortions than ever. It's like, what are you talking about, people?
And to your point, that's the message I'm trying to convey to the moderate Democrats is in my district is don't vote for me. Do not vote for me because I'm a Republican. Do not vote for me because you don't like my policy positions or you there's something else about me you don't like. But if you agree with my positions and if you believe that your current congressman is working for a party instead of for you, then just because I'm a Republican shouldn't negate me your vote. So it's to that point. Do you want to continue down that path of someone who is working for a corrupt political machine and not and working for advancing social agendas that you don't agree with? Just because, oh, I have to remain loyal to a party and I don't like this party. And so that's what I'm trying to get out there.
Well, I think we see that reflective in with the no party preference almost as being
right.
At a parity with Republicans.
Right, right.
And so a lot of those are just people that either in their work.
They're disaffected liberals oftentimes.
Right. And it's kind of a way for them to be safe and not be judged or canceled because mm-hmm. they're one party or the other.
But you're running for Congress, so. The point of the congressperson is to bring the current issues of the people to Congress.
Right.
So if you can articulate that to your constituents, that you're aware of what they are, and here's how you're going to address them with a good argument that's worthy of consideration, then I think you can sway the middle to come to your side.
One would think, but when you're fighting the candidates or incumbents who use emotion –
mm-hmm. That's
the only tactic is that they run purely on emotion. The issues that they frame, it's, oh, every Republican is an extremist. They're going to take away, you know, they're going to ban this.
They're going to give everybody an AR-15.
Right. Everyone is going to get an AR-15 and they're going to put.
Wait, I'm going to get an AR-15. What was that?
But yeah. So when they attack in that manner. Then its logic goes out the window.
Yeah.
Hey, well, okay, Steve. So, what are your major issues? Like your top one, two, or three?
So, major issues are the economy.
Economy
is number one.
Fix the economy.
Yeah. Fix the economy.
The cost of eggs and bacon.
Yeah, exactly.
It fixing the economy, and that also fixes foreign policy.
Kitchen table.
Okay.
And then is that your second one?
No. Well, economy and the foreign policy are tied together because with a strong economy, we have strong foreign policy. Because right now. We're beholden to China through their logistics of the supply chain.
Right, right.
At any time, they can cut us off, right?
Right.
So we appear weaker. Second is parental rights.
Parental rights.
I believe that is huge, especially with the millennial generation that's right in child-raising years. And
School.
And so the parental rights tied with schools, with education. Mm-hmm.
So quick. And what's the third?
And then
one?
The third is crime. Crime/homelessness.
Crime here. Okay. Yeah. Exactly. I think that's
crime/homelessness.
Issue. Okay. So, I'm going to give you a little curveball here.
Sure.
Parental rights.
Yes.
There's some people who see parental rights as the right of a parent to provide gender affirming care to their child who has gender dysphoria.
Right.
What would you say to them?
I would say that. It's their right over their children. However, let's wait till 18 and let's let the kid be a kid.
Right.
to your point, and this is what I would think the transgender community is concerned about, is that they want to make sure that the child can go home safely and have a dialogue with their parents and that the parents don't ostracize them. And that is the base of what their concerns are. Mitigate that. And then, yes.
And I have personal experience with that.
Yeah.
I have a friend, and they're going through that exact issue with mm-hmm. their parents.
Right.
And so and I'm there for that person and have been – but this person is now 22, 23 years old.
Okay.
Okay. And so that's a conversation that makes sense and to take place. And and it should be. They should be able to go to their parents because the studies have shown. Here we go, being Republicans, conservatives again. We always want to go to our facts and figures. The studies have shown that children that are experiencing gender dysphoria that have the support of their parents and their family, it's 80% of them go on to be able to deal with it. And it's the ones that don't are the ones that tend to be suicidal, that end up using becoming addicted to drugs and so on. So definitely that's something that needs to take place. But to have one of my daughters receive the track scholarship to Berkeley, had she had to run against a biological boy, and who knows if she would have been able to get that track scholarship. Mm. Now, she had to put in the work also on the academic side. She was 4.2. Mm-hmm. You know, she was active with all kinds of extracurriculars, took all the AP classes and whatnot. But still, it was that athletic opportunity for girls' sports that gave her – she was being recruited by multiple universities around the country. So that's where the slippery slope comes in.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, again, like I said with Frank earlier, we've come to some kind of impasse. So what's the hill that you're drawing that you're willing to die on, you know, the line in the sand? Where's that for you? Because ultimately you're going to have to
do that.
We're there.
I mean, I'm there. Right. The line's been drawn, and that's why I'm running. So
like on the line on those three issues, what's the line?
So we've crossed the line on parental rights, and, you know, such as the bills we've seen coming out of Sacramento. We've as far as crime, my local – where I live in the South Bay region of Los Angeles, there's three Vons, and in 1 month, one of the Vons has had smash and grabs in the alcohol, high-end alcohol cabinet, three times in 1 month. So that's drawing the line. It's spreading. The crime is spread everywhere. There is no community that is immune from crime.
Right.
When it comes to the economy, the climate activists are going to try to attack me, but the anti-fossil fuel agenda and how they're pushing, they want to be completely.
Okay. So that's one line you're drawing is like, hey,
correct. Yeah.
Okay. Fossil fuel. It's going to be here. It's there. We're not this green economy.
Correct.
That's a fantasy.
Correct.
Okay. So that's one line you've drawn.
Yeah. So those are the lines I've drawn on those issues.
Now, Steve, what are the communities again within your district?
So it's you go Palos Verdes, mm-hmm. Part of Harbor City, Lomita, half of Torrance, Redondo Beach, Hermosa Beach, Manhattan Beach, El Segundo, part of Culver City, through Westchester, Venice, Santa Monica, Marina Del Rey, then through West LA, Westwood, and on over to Beverly Hills. Yeah. Those are the communities.
Nice. All the cool places.
It is a nice district.
And you have a lot of good Republican groups within that district.
Yeah.
You know, you've got, let's see. Ba-da-ba-ba.
Women's Republican.
You've got May 10th, the Santa Monica Republicans Women's Federated.
That's going to be a great event mm-hmm. with one of your counterparts, I believe. Julie, she's out of this station, isn't she? She went to PragerU.
Oh, uh-huh.
And she's mm-hmm. filled in with.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's that young Gen Z that's doing that.
The youngest mm-hmm. radio host, something like that.
Yeah, Julie Young Girl.
Julie Young Girl.
Julie Young Girl.
The kid with the young girl.
No, there's a lot, and then you have the 61st AD with Denny Schneider.
Yes, with Denny
over there, and then
Denny's been great.
Also, the Palos Verdes
Republican Women's Federated.
Right, there's a good group there.
The various CRA chapters, mm-hmm. Lincoln Club, the South Bay Lincoln Club chapter. We've got, and then at Loyola Marymount, UCLA, Santa Monica mm-hmm. City College. I'm working with the College Republicans and the Young Americans for Freedom chapters at those.
Now, our friend Will Donahue, who used to be head of the
LMU, College Republicans. Yes.
Right. They've started a new group.
Yeah, they have, and it's great because it's Ryland Repetti. He is the president of the LMU College Republicans. His brother, Rankin, is the president of the YAF. And the great thing about those two, Rankin's going to intern this summer with Kevin McCarthy. Mm-hmm. And Rylan is going to intern with Mike Garcia.
Nice. All right. You know, we've only got 2 minutes left. You know, Paul, any closing words that you'd like to call to action?
David, thank you, as always, for letting me come on the show and hang out with the Neo-Mexican.
Neo-Mexican.
No, look, I love listen, that, you know. Adopt or foster an animal if you can. Yeah. Partner up with a rescue if you can.
Don't leave them in the heat.
Don't leave them in the car. Do not leave them in the car. PC 597.7 violation. And Bubbles Rescue.
Bubbles Rescue.
Bubbles and, Rescue.
And also, shout out to Ellie and the Leadwell Kitties. Leadwell Kitties. So that's good. Catherine. Remember, there was Catherine. I'm drawing a blank on her last name, but she headed up the LA Alliance for Elephants. LA Alliance for Elephants, you know, what a great organization. Mm. And then Michael Bell, work with coyotes, mm-hmm. with that. And, you know, our prayers go out to the doctor. He's not, you know, he's.
Yep.
And then also remember Jeff Fless, who did a lot of movies with animals. Jeff, mm-hmm. he's a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. I created the LA Animal Humanitarian Awards back in 2005, and I gave all of them awards at a vegan awards ceremony,
awesome.
Complete with a Native American drum circle.
Awesome.
Wow. Emilio, thank you for coming in.
Oh, yeah.
We look forward to having
thank you
back.
Again. Yes.
All right. And,
I love hanging with you.
All right, Frank Coffin, hope you guys are driving home safe. Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you for
having me, David.
Good luck on your run.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you as well.
All right. Awesome. Thank you, Sal. Thank you, Ryan. And we'll be back next week on AM 870, The Answer.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.